Welcome to the 38th episode of Metico Talks. For this episode, we're going down under. We're in Australia, and we're joined by Lisa Wade, CEO of DigitalX, a publicly listed blockchain financial company innovating the frontiers of Web3, providing digital asset funds management services for institutional investors and development of blockchain-enabled products for capital markets applications. Lisa brings 3 decades of experience in the finance industry, managing international portfolios for both DeFi and TradFi assets. During her career, Lisa has been director at Citigroup, where she specialized in arbitrage and derivatives, and head of digital innovation and sustainability at NAB, National Australia Bank, among other roles. Lisa, great to have you here, and welcome to Metico Talks.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, why don't we just jump right into it? I mean, given that very background, it'd be great to, given you covered TradFi and DeFi, what sparked your interest in digital assets? Where did the journey begin?
Yeah, I mean, I think like all of us, we all had friends. Well, you can see my background was a bit of derivatives trading. And back in the day, a few friends moved up to Byron and started trading Bitcoin. And I didn't really take it that seriously, to be honest. And then somewhere around 2011, we were building microgrid models with Bendigo Bank. And my passion for sustainable finance led me to building financial models around renewable energy. And it was a fortuitous meeting with Macquarie Bank, MasterCard, and American Express, where I made a flippant comment about Bitcoin not being very useful because there's only 21 million Bitcoin ever going to be issued. And the guy from Amex looked at me and cocked his head and said, "You do realize that they're infinitely divisible, do you? Don't you?" And then I just had this epiphany about fractionalization and what that could do for community investment. And I skipped over Bendigo Bank on my CV, but I was there as head of community assets for some time. And during that time, we looked at how we could use these blockchain technologies to fractionalize and sort of, let's just say, democratize impact investing and community investment. And I developed my passion there. Then I met National Australia Bank, and they were very interested in exploring different ideas around how to structure finance around those ideas. And there was a few moments inside of NAB, which was sort of the moments when I knew that that would be my whole career. And I think one of them was working with a really great pioneering Australian company called AgriDigital. And the head of trade finance wrote, wrote a paper on how to fund AgriDigital. And I had been inspired by the CEO, Emma Weston, and we've since become friends. And through the conversations I'd had with her, I read this trade finance paper and I said to the head of trade working capital, "I'm not really sure why you would fund AgriDigital this way because they tokenized the agricultural commodity. Wouldn't we do it this way? Please don't get me fired." And he said, "I won't get you fired. I really love the idea." And then about 6 weeks later, I was walking home from work and I just had this moment in time when I realized that that funding algorithm could sit against any tokenized asset. And in my head, I'd called it a digital security because it's the funding algorithm that collateralizes the asset, what we know a little bit today as DeFi. And then on the way home that day, I suddenly realized that I couldn't think of any financial instrument or any commodity or anything that I couldn't actually tokenize. And then from that moment, I have spent 24/7 working on financial models and use cases to bring this technology to life.
That's a great journey. Definitely inspiring. So why don't we...
I missed out some of the tears, but you know.
Why don't you tell us a bit then, what is DigitalX and its work? How should we classify it? Are you a native company? Are you fintech?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are listed on the ASX, but DigitalX is a company that truly inspired me when I learned about it. I couldn't believe I hadn't heard of it. So we are... one of the first companies in the world that are listed to mine blockchain. We don't mine blockchain anymore. That's back in the day. And we're still one of the only, I think maybe the only Australian listed company to have Bitcoin on our balance sheet. And DigitalX creates Web3 financial products and invests in Web3. So we have a number of funds. We're about to launch a new fund in my passion of asset reference tokens or real world asset tokens, as they're probably more commonly known at the moment. And in those funds, we invest in the crypto funds, we invest in the thematic of crypto, Web3, infrastructure rails, and all of the associated themes. There's a lot of AI in there, a lot of data plays, some really geeky things called ZK rollups, which are the ability to keep data offline and then validate it on chain without giving away any of the data. And then in the Bitcoin fund that we have, it's really an access product for people who don't have confidence to have their own wallets. And we do all of the lifting for them. It's really just to buy and hold of Bitcoin for people who want to own Bitcoin but really don't want to have to worry about the wallets. We put them in cold. We put the Bitcoin in cold storage. We have all the right insurances. We use a an insured custodian. So that's an access product. And the new product we'll be launching is an access product for investing in that algorithm that I spoke about that sits around this funding efficiency for tokenizing assets and a really efficient way of creating a shape shift in the risk of investing in real world assets by collateralizing the asset. And so that fund will invest in a diversified portfolio, effectively a mirror of real world assets that we tokenize and fund. And I won't get super geeky on that, but that's a really exciting innovation, I think. And we're all very excited to launch that on the 30th of June.
That is exciting. And which sort of, what market segments are you serving? What type of investors and what are their objectives and needs when you go to market?
Yeah, right now we're a wholesale investor, and I think it's pretty public, that there's a lot of tension in the market, let's just say, around regulation and, how the industry regulates itself. We run in the investment management business that we're talking about today, we run off a wholesale license, so we run wholesale funds, and that's really, until we have sort of solid guardrails around the retail investment landscape. We feel that, and traditionally that's how different types of thematic funds have scaled over the years, is to start in wholesale and then move into retail. And there's more of a track record and, more of an ability to get guidance on the regulation on how to run a retail fund with these thematics.
Can I step back for a second? Well, you mentioned, this new fund around this algorithm or the funding algorithm. Can you touch a bit about what the USPs of that are? Can you describe that kind of at least high level?
Oh, yeah. Well, we nickname it the playlist. Yeah. So basically, we do use digital twins. However, the real USP is the ability to ingest the data that forms the investment criteria. And that allows us in an unlisted investment world to analyze that data much faster and use our unique algorithms to make portfolio selections. And then within the IP that we create what we call digital securities, which is the funding around the tokenized asset. And that allows for a different risk-reward profile. Yes, there are risks around smart contracts and tokens, but there is this inherent shift in risk when you're collateralizing an asset and funding over that collateralized asset. And really what we are is a validation firm. So we validate that that asset exists. We validate that the payments from that asset are real, that they are made, and then we fund around that different level of risk on a very high level. Yeah.
Thank you. Very interesting. I think the space is obviously pretty hot from the buy side, and we've had announcements from BlackRock, Fidelity, and others announcing their move into digital asset space. I mean, how do you view that move, and will you remain differentiated in the space? I mean,
your edge, I guess? Yeah, look, I'm really excited that they're coming into the market. One of the things our fund can do is be a fund of funds, so we could work with other companies that are creating any type of digital asset. I sort of see it as a super efficient channel, as well as a super efficient way of investing. And I think we've got a long way to go before we truly are mainstream. And the fact that people like Fidelity, Templeton, and BlackRock are joining the market is very encouraging to me. When I was inside of National Australia Bank, there was already a big institutional take up in the work that's been done in the space. And really, companies like DigitalX, we're here to, offer those investments in an accessible way to the people that we see as our market, which will be very different to the spaces that, the Fidelities, Templetons, and BlackRocks of the world play into.
Okay, good. And I mean, following up on your, obviously, you were driving a lot of innovation projects, as you mentioned, at NAB and other Australian banks. Were any of those blockchain, digital asset related, crypto related?
Oh, yeah, that was all I basically did, including the sustainability. So I co-created with the Reserve Bank of Australia, Consensus, Commonwealth Bank, Perpetual, and ourselves, Project Atom, which yep. was the first pilot of the central bank digital currency. And I also was part of a project called Project Carbon, which was a carbon tokenization platform, which is now called Carbon Place. And, you know, we worked on a lot of a big range of innovations from stable coins to syndicated loans, which was the underlying of Project Atom. But really, it's all around this Project Atom was called Project Atom because if you settle an asset and the funding leg at the same time, we call that atomic settlement. And that is the heart of what DigitalX will be doing, which is this atomic settlement, removing the risks in the settlement leg, but then also demystifying and giving more transparency around the financial structure of deals and the cash flows that are associated with them.
Are banks ready for atomic settlement?
Well, look, everybody's experimenting, and atomic settlement is happening in DeFi all day, every day, 24/7. And, you know, it's really, you know, it's quite exciting when you watch what is happening in DeFi and we really are standing on the shoulders of giants. And, you know, it is quite awful to watch the SEC try and unpack and unravel some of the initiatives in the industry. And because the innovation is just so amazing. And are banks as agile as that? No way. However, they are taking this seriously. And I think that really, my there's so many parts to the journey and so many moments of realizations. But one of them, I wrote a paper for National Australia Bank around digital securities, which my definition of that is the funding algorithm that collateralizes the digital asset or the token. And when I did some research, because in a bank you get really pressed to, where's the background? What problem are you solving? What's the burning platform? My boss used to say, what's the burning platform? I'll back you if you can tell me the burning platform. And really what it comes down to is I started doing the research, and 86% of all exchanges around the world were already experimenting in this space. And I know that, you know, we've sort of had a bit of a bumpy ride in Australia with Chess and that project, but there's still exchanges like Deutsche Börse and NASDAQ who are really leading in this industry. And that was sort of the clincher for me, because what we're creating in what we're doing at DigitalX, and I don't really know the specifics around what BlackRock will do, but this is the blurring of the lines between public and private markets. And that's why exchanges are taking it seriously. And Citigroup go as far as to call it a revolution in portfolio construction. Now, I don't know what they're doing specifically, but they're also writing some great research reports about this space. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did something big in the future.
I mean, it's an exciting story. I mean, obviously, the banks should play a big role in this future. And you described writing research papers there. But in terms of given your experience there, what do you see as the big challenges for banks to actually productize and commercialize solutions in this space?
Yeah, look, innovating inside large organizations, it sounds like the dream job. But I mean, my hackles almost rise these days when you say the word innovation, because it's not easy. You have to have a lot of resilience. You have to navigate large organizations. And what we're seeing right now is you have pockets of really passionate people inside these large organizations who I absolutely respect. Probably all of us over the years have become friends. We've got a few little chats going on around the world. And then those people, you know, that sometimes are called intrapreneurs, because you have to engage all the different levels internally. And it's like, if I would create an analogy, it would be like a really nasty video game, because you get all the way up to one level and then you have to go all the way back down because you forgot to check a box with one person. And for, you know, good reason, because the risks associated are very real and it has to be done properly. And, you know, banks and financial institutions, I can joke about video games, but they're regulated and they take risks seriously. And as financial people, I often don't present that way, but I'm a career portfolio manager, career trader. Risk is the first thing I look at in any transaction. And it's absolutely the most important thing. So I don't think it's our job to criticize how hard it is to innovate inside a financial institution. I think it's sort of our job to be grateful that this due diligence is happening, so that when things like the NAB stablecoin, the ANZ stablecoin, BNY Mellon moving into the wallet space, Standard Chartered moving into the wallet space, Carbon Place is 10 global banks all working together. That was like a miracle. When we start to see these projects come through, especially this SWIFT project that was announced yesterday and the evolution of that, everything has been through the absolute ringer, and you know that you can trust those systems. And that's one of the things I'm most passionate about. I believe that trust is the currency of the future. And to make that real, we absolutely have to be trustworthy. We have to create that trust, and we need to create systems that are transparent so people can actually do their own due diligence and make up their own minds about what they want to trust and not trust. And the irony is that people would call blockchain trustless. So I'll just leave that one to everybody else. But I do believe that trust is the currency of the future. And that's what all, and I'll say us, financial institutions are building, standing on the shoulders of some very tall giants of some really great technologies.
Yeah, I mean, you've nailed basically one of our key themes where we see there's been so much innovation in the space, but trust has been what's the, we have had a crisis of trust in the last year and a half, basically, right? Which happens in any industry where there's big bubbles, but now there's definitely a role to bring that trust, to bring that regulated framework so people can engage here safely, basically, right, with confidence.
Yeah, I half joke around and I half don't when I say that when there's money involved, if you put three people in a room, you have one person who's really honest, so they can't see the anything coming. You get one person who wants to rip everybody else off, and you'll get another person who wants to leverage everything, and then over leverage it. And if they can get away with that, they'll leverage it some more. And that's been the history of finance, right? And what we've got here is some remarkable technology, some really bright technologists. Finance people, and then you always have that third element. And really our industry needs to build safeguards, and regulation is really important, because the more regulation, they'll move on to the next thing, and then we can get on with building the financial rails of the future. And, you know, obviously a lot of what's happened isn't great, but someone said to me, and it was really interesting, it was one of the story I will tell is a commissioner from the CFTC spoke at Consensus 2023, and she said something so very important. She said, everything is regulated because everything is a commodity. So any crypto and every crypto is a commodity. So don't think you're not regulated. You absolutely are regulated. The SEC then gets to decide what commodity is a security. So work out what the Howey test means for you and how they may interpret it. But you're still regulated by us. Guess what? Commingling of assets. Like, she just laughed and said, "You just don't do it." And basically shook her head and, you know, looked at the floor. Just don't do it. It's just not done in finance. It doesn't protect investors. It's just the 101 escrow accounts for clients. And then fraud is fraud. And if you commit fraud, you go to jail. And fraud is a crime. And fraud is not unique to crypto. Fraud is something that has been going on since the first person could write on paper.
Nice way to put it. 100% agree. You know, with all those, I spent the week in Sydney here. We met a lot of the banks, and there's a lot of exciting projects. But I would say there's also a lot of wide range of different projects. What do you think? And the banks obviously innovating on their own. How do you bring the banks together to innovate together? Because in the end, blockchain is a team sport. And what do you think the first use cases the industry can come together on are?
Well, I'd use Carbon Place as a great example. I'd use the Swift project yesterday. I think JP Morgan have a great, I think it's called Ion, their collaboration. But with Australian banks, if that's what you're specifically referring to, Carbon Place was successful because we had a global strategic innovation alliance that was championed by the CEO. So in my career, that was the first time I ever had a CEO endorse project, by the way, different because you have that backing and you have the support internally. But the difficulty in Australia, and I can tell this story because I'm no longer in banking, but we do try to collaborate more. I mean, Project Atom was CommBank and National Australia Bank, and CommBank was so easy to work with. They're amazing. But then you get this dangerous ground that people have a different perception of what you're doing working together, and it has to be absolutely all above board and documented, and there's antitrust considerations. And those antitrust considerations, I was on a project that was to be a market collaboration, maybe or maybe not on a stablecoin. I'm not sure what I can and can't say with NDAs and things like that. So let's just take it as a hypothetical. Yep. And when the lawyers read the disclaimer of the antitrust, it ended up that if anything we said, like they basically said, and if you mess up, you can go to jail. And I sort of said as a joke to everybody, are you prepared to go to jail for your career? We all decided that we didn't want to go to jail, but we're prepared to take a bit of a chance to build something for Australia, i.e. a stablecoin we all worked on. But it just becomes really time consuming and really expensive because you have to lawyer up with so many different layers of legal advice that it's very difficult to collaborate. So I think that probably ASIC needs to play more of a role, and they do with the sandboxes, and that's wonderful. And what I really think is, what I love is ASIC is working in with the Digital Finance CRC, and that is where I think all of us financial institutions will meet in the middle and collaborate together. And I'm very honoured to be on the commercialisation board for the DFCRC. And last Friday they had a showcase, and oh my goodness, that was wonderful. That because everybody is collaborating, the Reserve Bank of Australia is sitting at the centre, ASIC's watching, Treasury's watching, everybody's involved, and the projects that were showcased, we did a little test with Canvas, which was amazing, on the EAUD, but all of the banks had great projects, and if we can have the EAUD as the centrepiece, right now that's really wonderful. And I think it's okay to say, because it's my opinion, but ANZ had the best project, and I probably can't say what it was, but they had a number of projects. But actually what it involved was engaging nearly each and every Australian, because their access point was something that was of service to Australian consumers, because it's something that we all have, which I don't want to go into their project. But then the possibility of that, of every, wouldn't even need to be ANZ, everybody could work together around the RBA, of everybody having a wallet, that's a game changer, because we all need to be Web3 savvy. These are, without a doubt, the financial rails of the future. We need to build them. We are building them. One way or the other, we'll all end up working together. And I think that, you know, initiatives like the CRC will really hold us in good stead for the future.
I mean, that's a great picture you're painting. I mean, given your global perspective, where do you think, and where coming specific on Australia, where's Australia relative to other jurisdictions in terms of the engagement with regulators and the rules of the road, let's say, basically?
Yeah, well, I think there's the chain analysis survey put Australia outside of the top 20, and I think we're just inside of the top 40 globally of volumes in crypto and building of these Web3 financial rails. So I guess I'm sort of in a blind spot because I'm working where all the activity is happening. It is a very, it's always been a big challenge being in finance in Australia, because we do sort of tend to, we are far away and tend to only see the world through our own lens. And that's why I do travel a little bit, because we're a very proud Australian company running a global business. And, I think, obviously America's got its issues, but in the Middle East in particular with the VARA legislation or regulation, what's happening in Europe with MiCA, Hong Kong is starting to emerge. When I was at Consensus, Tokyo said they wanted to be the Asia Pacific hub. So I'm really positive that will filter into Australia. And, I'm also on the board of Blockchain Australia, and we play a very big role in making sure that Australia is communicating with the rest of the world and understanding. But what I will say is, in my Citigroup days, we often innovated the financial products for Australia because we can be a microcosm of the broader financial market. So it's very hard for us to be in the top 10 because, we're not even in the top 10 for the MSCI World Index. Last time I checked, I could be wrong on that. Apologies if I am. Been a while since I was an equities trader. But the thing is that we can innovate down here, and we are a great microcosm to test and iterate and create proof of concepts and minimal viable products and really then take what we create here out to the world. And I guess that's DigitalX's aspiration, to just, stick to one and focus and really do what we're doing really well, to build it in Australia and then take it out into the world.
Thanks. That's a very good explanation. I mean, we mentioned earlier there's been some malfeasance, let's say, that I guess FAM was talking about the CFTC when you're in Consensus, basically. Obviously that's tainted the industry to a degree. How does DigitalX differentiate itself, kind of separate itself from this? And we've talked about trust. How do you build trust with your clients and ecosystem with this backdrop of the last year and a half?
Yeah, I mean, it's really about doing the work for us. And, we inside of our funds business, we do intense due diligence. We are research first. We are risk first. We build models. We analyze each and every holding that we have. And the way I would describe our team is a safe pair of hands, where we don't invest in anything unless we've done the due diligence. And, you know, that is really the only way to differentiate ourselves and to, we just don't make blanket sweep, you know, sweeping investments. We're risk first, and we analyze the risk. We have a process we call the universal scoring matrix, where we take all traditional finance risk metrics, adapt them for crypto. Not all crypto is created equal. Even our art assets or our real world assets, we use the same process across an entire universal scoring matrix, and nothing gets in any portfolio unless it passes all our risk reward requirements. And we have what are called red flags, which are certain hot button issues that, or things that happen that we will not touch with a 10-foot pole, which has served us quite well. And I don't like to, you know, sort of like, I don't want to play that down, and I don't want to tarnish other people, but you know, we didn't own Luna, we didn't own FTX because we red flagged them. And that's really important. You know, I'll go back to commingling of assets is just a red flag no matter what, whether it's an equity, a real world asset token, like, or a crypto or whatever exchange, no commingling, don't do it.
Absolutely. I mean, what we've heard in the last while is even some of the largest funds in the market did no due diligence, got caught up in the hype. So it's good to hear you've got a solid grounding in how you approach the market. Are there any broad industry, let's say, industry developments that excite you that are going on right now, either Australia or globally, we should be looking at for the next week?
I think I'm a bit of a geek. I think the highlights at the moment are all around regulation. And last night I got a very lovely email on a draft of some payments regulations that that there'll be submissions, and you know, there'll be a consultation period. But I thought that regulation was really positive in terms of stablecoins. I think Australia needs some kind of stablecoin because that's the backbone of facilitating the flow. And I found what I've read to be really positive, really robust, sort of double oversight from APRA and ASIC, which is what we need. AFSL licenses attached, which is what we want. And I think that, you know, if we can see more of that, I think that'll be really positive if we can see more of it globally. And I want to be a little bit contrarian on the US moves, because obviously it's perceived as being very negative for our industry. However, I do think in the long term and the long run, that, you know, finding a middle ground in the US and really nurturing that industry and understanding what a security is and getting that certainty, we're going through the pain now, but I think the pain will result in gain. And then there's just this sort of little other contrarian part of me that thinks, well, wow, you know, the world went on a few really big things like renewable energy without the US getting on board early. You know, China was the early adopter of renewable energy. We had to fight in Australia. You know, look at some of the early work of the Clean Energy Finance Corporation and, you know, all of that work. So and there's a little part of me that thinks, well, maybe it'll just make the rest of the world fight harder. And so I'm kind of encouraged by that. I might be a little bit more worried if China hadn't sort of shifted over the last couple of weeks. And I think the Hong Kong and China movement is probably, if I had to pick a top three, that would be it for this week. But you know, again, I think I put on my LinkedIn last night that Swift announcement. It was hailed as the most innovative thing in Web3 so far, and I would absolutely agree that that might be an understatement in the future, because that's huge.
Definitely something to watch. I mean, that is a big player finally embracing the space, right?
It's mind-blowing, literally.
You had an interesting comment before, but let's say the small size of Australia enables you to innovate and experiment kind of for the broader global financial system. I mean, the financial system here has actually been pretty innovative, right? With banks moving to cloud, you know, bank legislation was quite advanced, challenger bank ecosystems, et cetera, were allowed to develop. Will Australia punch above its weight in the digital asset economy? Can it be a leader in this space as well?
I absolutely, wholeheartedly believe we can be a leader. I think there's lots of great innovation happening, and I think that, you know, we really need to get in front of sentiment and create our own narrative and write our own stories. We've got a very great venture capital ecosystem in Australia. We've got great minds. We've got, you know, really good collaboration. And, you know, I really do believe that we can, I wouldn't even say punch above our weight. I'd just say lead and, you know, show the world how innovative we are and, you know, really prove this intersectionality. You know, everyone likes to talk about AI, but, you know, crypto space has been using that for a long time as well. You know, we're building, what we're building is really innovative and can, you know, from my point of view, Citigroup in 2018 hit the nail on the head. The Web3 financial rails create a financial revolution at the investment management level. And in Australia, we have such a large superannuation industry that we really do have a lot of ways that we can support that financial revolution and lead it.
That's a great summary. Lisa, I think we're coming up on time. I really appreciate you being here. Where can people see you or meet with you next?
Well, I'm always on LinkedIn, hanging around on the internet. I'll be waiting for the Web3 version of that to emerge. We're based in 50 Bridge Street, but I'll next be, I'll be at Blockchain Week. So I'm hosting a panel in Sydney on the Monday and Melbourne on the Friday. So just hit me up and I'll be around and, you know, always love having coffees with people and meeting people in the industry. And thank you very much for having me on.
Lisa, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for being a guest on the show and for sharing your insights and our first, and particularly our first in Australia. So thanks for joining us.
Well, that is a great honor. Thank you very much.
Great milestone for us. Well,
listen, and you us down under. I mean, what more can we ask for?
Listen, thanks again. And to everybody that joined, thanks for joining. We'll announce when the recording is available. And as usual, through the usual channel, through our website and through your favorite podcast channels. In the meantime, thanks for joining. Please follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter and see you next time. Thanks again.